This is Hazel Kahn, and you're tuned to Tidings on WPKN 89.5 Bridgeport, 88.7 Montauk, and streaming on WPKN.org. Today I ask, what does it feel like to be dying? I realize that this is an aggressive, maybe even an impertinent question. People turn away when I tell them I'm looking to answer it. It's not that dying is a provocative subject like Gaza or tipping or begging or eating animals, where it's easy to engage people. No, it's that dying is a profoundly disturbing, taboo subject in our culture, and not one that easily invites exploration or conversation. As I did the research for this program, I wondered if the experience of dying might be beyond language. Although Leo Tolstoy gave lie to that idea in his brilliant short story, The Death of Ivan Ilyich, which he completed in 1886. Poor Ivan Ilyich! How much less wretched his dying would have been had he had access to a 21st century hospice program. Most of what we know about how dying feels is what we have inferred from the behavior of dying people. We know what dying looks like, but can only guess whether that's also what it feels like. Although I don't know if Tolstoy based his harrowing account of dying on observation or intuition or books, in my search I turned to three women, each of whom have spent considerable parts of their professional lives with dying people. I'm grateful to them for the generosity with which they gave me their time and shared their experiences and thoughts. Sarah Zimmerman has been a social worker with East End Hospice in West Hampton, New York, since 1992. She's now a bereavement coordinator working with the families of patients. Nancy Gray is a retired RN who for the past 10 years has been a practitioner of energetics, trained in the healing touch. Vicky Cortese, a licensed clinical social worker, has spent 20 years in the field as geriatric and medical social worker, working in nursing homes, hospice, and home care. She's now enrolled in a post-master certificate program at NYU in hospice and palliative care. You'll hear first from Vicky and then from Sarah as they help me answer my question, what is dying like? Does the dying person know just the same things that we know, that they're withdrawing, that they're thinking about completion and journeys and all that stuff? That's what we hear and see them do, but is that all there is, or is there something else going on?
Well, I think it's a very individual process. I think that there are people who have a certain kind of awareness that they might be nearing the end of their lives. You know, some people may have finished the chemotherapy or the radiation or gone through the medical part of things, and some people are willing to grasp on. I think it's also, you know, one dies as one lives, I think, to some extent. So I think your personality is what it is, and there are people who are just more willing to enter into that last phase of life and be open to things and to share it with others. I also think there are many people for whom it's a very interior journey. And I think some people can't articulate it. You know, it's not that it's not happening, and it's not that they're not going through many different reflections and processes. Also looking at the things that need to be finished that are left undone. I think that's a big piece for many people as well. But I do think that some people are more willing to enter into that than others. And for others, they can't articulate it. There are many people who just can't articulate, you know, what they're going through.
Complicating the communications is a well-intentioned mutual denial by which dying people may not want to acknowledge that they know they're dying for fear of upsetting family members, while they in turn may not discuss the situation openly to protect the dying person. Family dynamics around dying may remain very much what they were in life.
If they are coping by using denial, we can't take their coping away from them. We sort of have to meet them where they are. And over time, when trust is established, lots of times there will be little breakthroughs. There will be, on one day, they will seem like they are more aware, and then they slip right back into that denial. So there is a what they call sort of a middle knowledge, where the denial isn't totally complete. But people use it to cope. And if that's how they're coping, that's how they're coping. We can't take that away. They know they're dying most likely because their physician has told them and given them a prognosis. If someone is using denial, they will not hear that. But some people do hear it and appreciate it. You become weaker.
Weaker. Mm-hmm.
Weaker. Appetite diminishes. Energy is reserved almost automatically for the major organs. So people will spend more time in bed, sleep more, eat less. Sometimes breathing patterns change and become irregular. I think what's very hard for families is, and it's not a physical thing, although it is a little bit, but it's more, I would say, emotional, but people withdraw from their earthly attachments. In order to leave, people need to disconnect from all that they love and care for. So that includes family members. That can be very distressing to family members unless they understand it.
Do you think that the patient knows that these are signs of dying? Do they translate that into...
I don't know if they actually know. I think they can feel the changes in their bodies. And
right.
Sometimes people will ask the nurse, what can I expect here? How is it going to be? I think because people think it's going to be like some big, big thing is going to happen. And mostly, if we don't interfere with the process, the body has this beautiful wisdom about shutting down in a very orderly fashion.
Although from the outside we can observe and describe the changes we witness in the dying person, there's a lot more going on, the meaning of which we can only guess at. Vicky Cortese describes the enormity of it, the subtle move to the interior, and the unpredictability of individual differences. Is it just that they know this because, you know, they're in a hospital, they've had chemo, they've got the doctors around them, that it's objectively true that they're dying and they just accept that? Or is there some internal, is there some other level of knowing this, that you're dying?
I would say, based on the people that I've worked with, I would say that there is another level. I think that there's an interiority about their experience that we can't fully know. We can only observe it. And if the worker is very attentive and has gotten to know this person over time, you know, you see the subtle changes and you see the comments begin to change. There might be a sense of, you know, maybe not being as concerned about the outside world, and they start to focus a little more on the inside world and their personal experience, you know. And they also do a lot of, you know, when they're at that point, they do a lot of life review. They start looking back and they talk about things like, you know, the wonderful times that they shared with their spouses, or, gee, did I show you the pictures of our cruise that we took? And so there becomes a period of reflection for people. I'm talking, about, of course, about people who know that they're on this journey, who know that they've been in treatment and the treatment isn't working anymore. Obviously, not somebody who is hit with something rather suddenly. They have this time. But sometimes, you know, the quality of the comments change, the quality of the speech changes. I would even go so far as to say there's a certain look in the eye when people become slightly more detached, and you feel that they're not quite as engaged, maybe, as they used to be.
Well, even when they're speaking, when they're talking to you, you mean, or when they're just...
When they're talking to me, yeah.
Their eyes are detached when they're even talking about these kinds of things.
Yes, there's a little bit of a faraway quality, I'd say. And I think with when people have worked with the dying, you start to recognize that look. And it's just a look. It's a little hard to describe, but I described it as best I can as a slightly faraway, slightly detached look that people have. And you kind of know that, you know, they're a little less concerned about whether the grandchildren are going to visit on the weekend, or, you know, their adult children are coming out to help or whatever. And you know, the journey, that's when I think the journey takes on a difference. There's a change from the exterior to the interior. I would say that for some people, that they're not particularly as aware of that, of that slight detachment, of that slight move to the interior world or the interior space. You know, I would say some people have more of an awareness of it than others. Some people, as they live more, you know, sort of bluntly and openly, other people are more private about it. So you'll get a different sort of narrative response from each person depending, you know, on who they are. You know, and there are some people who never speak about it. There are some people who journey toward death and never, ever articulate it, never admit it, never speak of it.
They just act as if everything's normal and that they will see the pansies again next year and they will be at the next Christmas?
Yeah, they do. They do up until the very, very end, maybe. There are some people who just really do not want to speak of it. And, you know, even though, say, hospice may be in the house and even though they've established maybe a good relationship with the hospice workers, that they still don't want to talk about it because they just can't grasp the notion, you know, the idea of death, the idea of going into this place that is so unknown is such an enormous step to contemplate that I think some people just can't wrap their minds around it.
It seems that for some people, dying is experienced as a process of divestment, bringing with it a distillation or purification. Listen first to Sarah and then to Nancy, giving us further insight into what the dying person may be experiencing, what dying may feel like.
People who are dying are very finely tuned. Kind of all the extra stuff is stripped away. So they're very good at determining who's sincere and really can hear about their pain without, like, flinching, not be afraid to hear something that they may have to say. Very good at it. Uncannily good.
And it's kind of letting go, you know, everything here in their earthly plane of letting go of their belongings, letting go of their emotional attachments to other people, to their pets, to just in general a distancing.
This is Tidings from Hazel Khan on WPKN Radio, and you're listening to three healthcare professionals talk about what it's like to be dying and whether this question can ever be fully answered. On the other hand, it's easy to misunderstand or miss what the dying person is communicating because it is often expressed in an obscure or unexpected way, sometimes in symbols or dreams, or what we might describe as visitations, visions, or hallucinations. Perhaps these are other ways in which people show that they're starting to withdraw from the world. What kind of things would people say, or from your experience when you've been with people who are in that, or you're helping them in the transitioning, what kind of things would they, might they say? What kind of language would they use? Or, you know, because that's, you know, that's what I'm trying to see if we can get at, because I know it's incredibly difficult to get at it, is what does it feel like? What is it that they know? Let's put it that way. What is it that they know when they know they're dying?
I think for me, the thing that's most, that people will say, it's time to be with and name other people that have died. And that is very, very common. You know, like my mom before she died would say, it's time for, I'll always be with you, but now it's time to be with. She'd name my father and her sisters and brothers. And that is a very common thread, to be joining somebody.
They might say, am I dying? Am I dying? And I would say, well, what do you think? And they might say, yeah, I think so. And lots of times they won't be that direct. They'll speak in more symbolic language, like using travel language. You know, if somebody was a sailor, say, they might say, you know, the boat's not ready yet. Or I'm waiting for the wind. Or the bus hasn't come to the bus stop yet. Some kind of symbolic language to let you know that something's coming.
That's very interesting. So you think that's how they're experiencing it then? It's not that they've read about this or learned about it.
No.
Learned how to
they
say
are
it. They
experiencing
are experiencing
it.
The idea of being on some kind of travel journey.
Yeah. Or sometimes people will see somebody or something that we can't see. People can use dreams. I remember another young person who, a woman, young, I can't remember her diagnosis, but she had young children. And I remember her saying, tell those angels to get out of here. I'm not ready yet. Or people will, you'll see them like smiling and you'll say, what's going on? And they'll say, my mother was just here. She said she's waiting for me. I'm ready.
And might that be the first time they've sort of openly acknowledged something?
It might be. It might be. Sometimes people shy away from it because they're afraid of it. There are the dreams. There are seeing places and people that we don't see. We believe that people can often choose their time of death.
We've often heard about dying people who seem to have control over the timing or circumstances of their death, waiting for a family event or for somebody to arrive or to complete something of importance to them. They may start saying their farewells in anticipation, and sometimes they may be impatient for their dying to end.
There are people who just want it to be over. There are people who just will say to you, you know, I don't think I can go through this. This is, you know, I want this to be over. I don't feel I have any quality of life. You know, perhaps they've been sitting in a chair for 5 months, and they know that they need help to go to the bathroom, and they can barely make it into the bed. Some people stay in bed. Some people might even stay in a recliner chair. And sometimes it just becomes very, very difficult for them. And they will say to you, I just don't think that I can go through this. You know, and that's when they ask that question, how long will it be? Because, you know, they wish it were over. And they will verbalize that to you. They will say, you know, I just want this to be over. This has been too much. This has been going on for too long. And I really just want this to be over.
Yeah, so how long will it be till the bus gets here, sort of thing?
Yes. And some people are ready. Some people are more than ready. Some people are just at that point where they say, you know, I've done what I need to do, and I just am ready. I'm ready for this to happen.
Sarah shares her experience of how dying people may actively participate in the path that their dying takes.
Sometimes if they need to, they'll just turn their face to the wall. It's not, you know, if we can't guide the family and they're not hearing or for whatever reason can't reduce the stimulation, back off a little bit and have it be quiet and peaceful, patient will just turn their face to the wall.
I see.
Make a conscious choice.
To reduce stimulation and be in a more peaceful place.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
I see. So that's kind of necessary to die. I mean, for some people.
For
you want
some
to
people.
Die.
Not every people. Other people will die with their whole family on their bed. It is just very individual.
But
that withdrawal then that happens for that person with the family on the bed is very fast.
What do you think that is? Is it just a need to do the process quickly or properly in some way? Or
I just think we can't leave if we're still focused on here and still very much a part of life and our relationships. I don't think we can go. Sometimes people are ready mentally before their body is ready. So they'll be ready and be waiting for a while.
What it's like to be dying and how much we can shape our own dying is clearly a mystery. Equally mysterious is the not so unusual phenomenon of the person dying at the very moment that family members have briefly left the bedside or the nurse has left the room, something that can be enormously upsetting to the family who feel they've missed the moment. Here's how Vicky sees it, as Nancy follows up with similar observations.
It does happen. You can have the family be present all around the bed, and maybe the family says, well, we're going out for coffee or we're going home to take a shower and we'll be back, and the person dies. And it also happens in the middle of the night. I think when you speak to nurses at the hospital or hospice or the night nurses who go in at nighttime, very often the person will choose to die at night. Now, I say choose to die. I'm using that word in quotes carefully because, you know, how can we say what's really going on? But in some respects, it certainly does happen when the family's not there. That does happen.
How do you interpret that? If it's not, I mean, forget about choosing. I mean, how do you have another interpretation?
You know, I honestly don't. I just think it's part of the constellation of what people do.
They may just be much more quiet and solitude. Also, a family can be with somebody 24 hours and then leave to go home and come back if it's a hospital setting or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that very, very often, the person dies when they're alone. And they don't really know why, but it's not an uncommon thing.
How do you interpret that?
You know, I just think it's this final of closing down of our system here, that it's just a personal thing sometimes. You need to just be alone.
When you're dying.
Yeah.
That seems so strange, doesn't it? I mean, I'm sure it's happened. I'm just trying to understand that. So it's as if the only way you can sort of get on with it is if you're alone. Otherwise, if people are distracting you from getting on with it in some way, the dying. I don't know. I mean, that sounds so harsh.
Well,
but
I just think I think it's much more on energetic terms. Somebody distracting us, I think. You know, as our energy is morphing into changing, and we don't know exactly, you know, what happens. But, you know, there is some level of, you know, just this happening when you're alone.
Back on what I learned, I see that Sarah, Nancy, and Vicky were each reluctant at times to generalize when I pressed them for conclusive answers. I realize now that much of their knowledge is intuitive, coming as it does from working with people on an individual, one-on-one basis. These three professionals also share a willingness to acknowledge the mysterious, to be comfortable with the unknown, and with perhaps never knowing the answers. Energy work is mystifying in itself, says Nancy. Perhaps, I told myself more than once, it's presumptive and intrusive to ask the question, to inquire any more closely into it than I did. Maybe what it's like to be dying is a question that can't be answered, and maybe that's the answer. Tidings from Hazel Khan is heard on the second Wednesday of each month at 12:30 p.m. on WPKN 89.5 Bridgeport, WPKM 88.7 Montauk, and streaming on WPKN.org. Tidings is produced by Tony Ernst.